Heard about Anchor? It is the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. There are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your own phone or computer. Anchor will also distribute your podcast so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more podcast platforms. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So download the Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started today. I know it's been too long, folks, but I had to come back with an absolute banger of a podcast. But before we get into the podcast, I just want to say quickly that we here at YWC Football Talk are thinking about the city of Buffalo. I know the three of us are rivals with Buffalo, but what happened was just awful, an awful event. It was great to see today the Bills and other Buffalo sports teams stepping up, do their part to help the community out, especially Josh Allen. But just wanted to send that quickly, too, because Buffalo is a place I go to sometimes. I'm very close to it, but just wanted to say that quickly that we're thinking of the city of Buffalo and we're here for you. Well, anyway, on to more exciting things. I just wanted to get out of the way quickly, you know, do my part to say something nice, because we are here on episode number 168 of YWC Football Talk. And for the third year in a row, Big Rat, it is Patriots at Dolphins, but the schedule makers decided to go, let's send it down to South Beach. But I have a take for you about this. I would rather see the Patriots go there when it's boiling hot than have to go there, you know, when their bodies are acclimated to the New England winter, then go down south. Because the last three times they've gone down south in December, obviously, look, you had the miracle in Miami, the Tua game in 2015, and then last year where the wheels kind of fell off for the Patriots in that Week 18 game. So that's just a take I have, but Week one, at least this time, you guys don't open week. As soon as I saw week two, Buffalo, Tennessee, Monday Night Football, my first thoughts were, Big Rat must be thrilled he doesn't have to face Josh Allen week two.
And I was very thrilled. And you can go back even further with the Patriots thing. In 2015, when they played in the last week of the season and the Dolphins beat them to cost the Patriots the one seed, the year that the Patriots
won. 2018.
Yeah.
Oh, no, 2015. That's right, 2015.
And then there was also 2017, they played on Monday Night Football. It didn't end up affecting their seeding, but that was also in December. Dolphins also won that game.
Oh, yes, the Xavier. I remember there was a crazy Xavier Howard pick.
Yes, on Brady. Yeah, like that was – yeah, so this – and the last time the Patriots did beat the Dolphins was the 43-0 ass-kicking in 2019, which was in September. Yeah. So, yeah, I agree with you on that. And also, not only am I happy I don't have to face Josh Allen week two, I face Josh Allen week three, and they'll be on a short week because they're playing on Monday Night Football the week prior. And the Dolphins need every piece of help they can get to win that game, because that game is their season.
And then week two, they're facing
Baltimore.
Oh, so yeah. Oh, shit. That's right. So, yeah, literally, I just realized this now. Baltimore literally goes in a triangle here. It goes Danny, you, me. That's literally Baltimore. Yeah. Well, Baltimore's first four games are all AFC East. It's just as weird as the Patriots playing four primetime games in a row.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very, very odd. Very, 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 very strange, to say the least.
Yeah. But we.
It's going to be fun. September, the primetime schedule for September is loaded. Like, Rams is as good of an opening game as we've ever had. Like, really. Like, it's that good. And just like all those primetime games, those first few weeks are going to be great. Like, really, really exciting.
Like, including the return of Danny Dimes in primetime, but only one of the year, unless we want to record at 9:30 in the morning in London, from London, England.
A London podcast instead. Early in the day. But we also like, normally the Monday night game is something kind of stale. Like in week one, it's normally something with the Raiders and Broncos, some shit like that. Last year it was kind of cool with Baltimore, but normally it's a boring Raiders, Broncos, Chargers game. This year now you get Broncos and Seahawks right away, week one. That's pretty cool.
Yep. And to get the third guest of the podcast in here, Danny, honestly, this is the best time of year for what ifs, but it's also like the brunt of the off season. Obviously, look, there's OTAs, which the only people who truly follow OTAs, I feel like, are like the football sickos like us who just like kind of love this stuff. You want to see what your teams are doing. It's a time of year where is Danny Dimes finally going to break out? Is they show him throwing in just mesh jerseys and shorts and helmets? It's that time of year where everyone has like that still that little glimmer of hope, but you slowly start to realize where your team's at. And I feel like out of all our teams here, obviously, look, Patriots draft, that episode still is coming, folks. Life's gotten in the way. We'll talk about the Dolphins draft in a little bit. But Danny's team had a hell of a first round this year. Garrett Wilson, Sauce Gardner, Jermaine Johnson, even Breece Hall in the second round, who I know Daniel Jeremiah was praising. What's it like right now in gangrene, Danny?
All right. So we are 4 minutes and 30 seconds into the podcast. I believe this is my first pod back on in 5 months, right? Griff schedules me. And then we have this guy, Big Rat, pull the worst invasion angle off since ECW and WCW invaded WWF, man. Do I really got to sit here and tell you how overrated your Dolphins are again? Again?
You'll be wrong.
Again. Come on, man. Again. Come on. So, the talk of the town right now, the New York Jets.
Yep.
The glimmer is there. The hope is there. We're up. We haven't been this up since maybe 2015. And I know everyone says Jet fans always are delusional and they always find a way to, you know, give themselves false realities. I'm telling you right now, this is going to be, I'm not making a crazy prediction here and saying, you know, they're going to do what the Bengals did, but this is the year you finally see the Jets start to get their shit together and turn it around, and they'll be considered serious threats for playoffs next year. So what was the original question, bro?
What was your thoughts on the draft and everything like that?
What was my thoughts on the draft?
Yeah,
okay,
who got the sauce? Who's got the sauce?
My game plan going into the draft. I loved Kayvon Thibodeau. That was my guy. That was the guy I wanted. But if you would have told me that we'd walk out with Sauce Gardner, Jermaine Johnson, who I did like as well, you know, I was totally cool with him at 10. But the problem we had walking into the draft is we weren't going to be able to go pass rusher, corner, and wide receiver. The guy, the genie, Joe Douglas, probably going to win Executive of the Year this year, by the way, finds a way to hop back up into the first round, grab a top 10 talent on their board. I don't know why he fell. It happens every year. A stud falls every year. Look at Jeremiah Owusu Kamara last year. Yeah. Fell into the second round, was still a stud, was still the player that came, that was hyped up to be. So Jermaine Johnson falls to us at 23. Get him. Sauce Gardner, best corner on the board, in my opinion, and a lot of people's opinions. I mean, Stingley, the hype was there. We all know the story about Stingley. Can't stay healthy, you know. And injured in college is going to be injured in the pros. And, you know, Garrett Wilson, who, you know, I wanted Jermaine. I mean, not Jermaine. I wanted, oh, my God, slipping.
London?
No, I didn't want London. I wanted,
Jameson Williams?
No. Jameson Williams, yes. Jameson Williams. I think he'll end up being the best receiver in the draft, but I do understand our logic that we need something right now. We can't really wait on him to rehab and get healthy and lose that training camp. So, you know, Garrett Wilson is, you know, a lot of people's number one receiver. He wasn't mine, but he fits the system. He definitely fits the system. So, you know, you guys all know me who follow me. I was so pressed for Deebo Samuel. I wanted that trade to get done. Didn't pull the trigger. It is what it is. Next year is the year where Corey Davis gets cut and we bring in that bona fide superstar number one receiver. So I'm okay with that. And I realize that's the plan because some people over here have to fucking steal trades and steal our players when a deal is already fucking made. But it's all right. You know, at least they don't have the quarterback. At least they don't have the quarterback to get him the ball and actually fully utilize him. So I'm okay with it.
What, see, this is okay. All the shit talking. Never forget this. Yes, don't get me wrong. I take my shots at Danny too. I will forever remind him that I told him for weeks that the Jets were going to beat the Browns in that 2020 game, and he just kept denying it. He blames the receivers getting hurt. Yes, Jarvis Landry, Rashard Higgins, and
Donovan. Wasn't it COVID though?
It was COVID. Yes, but like. That team utilizes their tight ends and their running backs in the passing game more than any team in the league. And Kareem Hunt and Njoku and Austin Hooper and all those guys were healthy. Like, so it was a bad argument. But in any event.
Thank God they lost that game.
And notice on this podcast, I always give him credit where it deserves. I messaged him the night of the draft and I said, you guys killed it. I did that. He never does any of that shit to me. Everything to him
are
overrated. The Fins are disappointments. He's bragging about how he was right on how they were overrated last year because they finished with 9 wins instead of 10 because the win total was at 9.5. Literally, that one game difference is what he's throwing a party about. And they won 10 games the year before. So I don't understand that at all.
Let me hold you up because you're straight up lying to the people right now. No, I've been praising your heat. Your heat, who I take malicious attacks at, all the time, and I've been praising them this whole playoff run.
The other team, yes, not my football team, yes. Oh, how brave of you. You're praising the basketball team that's the one seed in the East that went to the finals 2 years ago, that's in the Eastern Conference Finals again. That takes a lot of courage.
To tell you Jimmy Butler is the best player in the playoffs right now over guys like Luka Doncic, who's also bowling, is a big statement, and you're probably not going to get that statement. I mean, maybe now after that game one, a lot of people want to say that, but I said that beforehand. So you got to give me credit there. I give credit where it's due, people. This guy just needs to wake up sometimes.
Not to the Dolphins, though. Never, because the Dolphins.
What have they done to deserve it?
They've won 19 games the last 2 years. They're like a good team. Like, I don't know. Like,
they're mediocre. They're average. They're league average.
And this year, they're projected to win 10. Their win total's at 9.5, and it's juiced towards the over. So they're projected to be a playoff team. Like,
take the under again, people.
All right. I'll talk about the Jets because I've been, unlike Danny, I actually get brought back a little more often. So I've gotten to talk about Tyreek Hill and all that other stuff. But I'll just remind the people, Tyreek Hill last year with Patrick Mahomes, it was not a deep shot offense. Tyreek Hill was a low A-dot receiver last year. He got short passes from Mahomes and made yards after the catch with them. Even if you think that's all Tua is, which I don't, but even if you like stupidly think that, that is no different than how Tyreek Hill was utilized last year. He had like the fourth lowest A-dot in the NFL amongst receivers with 100 targets. Despite his reputation, most of his targets are catching a short pass and getting yards after the catch. And if that's what you think Tua is, that's no problem. He can easily do that. So that's wrong right there. Now, moving on to the Jets, I did praise them for their draft. I love Sauce Gardner. Unlike Danny, I'm not going to change my evaluation of a player just because they go to my rival's team. I thought Sauce Gardner was a stud, because I followed that Cincinnati team very closely. And Daniel Jeremiah said this. They're not some underdog story that made the college football playoff. They have just as much talent as anyone outside of Bama and Georgia. They have like as many people drafted as any school in the country, aside from Bama and Georgia. That was a loaded team, like full up. It doesn't matter.
Alec Phillips, Kobe Bryant.
Yes. And Kobe, and then like Alex Pierce and fucking Desmond Ridder, of course.
Alex
like,
Pierce, my bad.
Yeah. Desmond Ridder too. Like they have like six guys drafted and a bunch of UDFAs that got signed up as well. That was a loaded team. Sauce was their best player. He was the best player in the history of Cincinnati. Everyone knows the stat. He never allowed a touchdown. He never allowed a 100-yard receiver. Like he was first
Bearcat, like first rounder in like 50 years as well.
And he was in the top five. And like, and some people were even saying Kobe Bryant, the other DB. And yeah, that's
Seattle.
Name. Yeah, that's his name, everyone. Kobe Bryant.
That's with a C.
With a C. He was actually underrated in this draft process because he wasn't like the best DB in his own backfield because of how good Sauce Gardner was, even though he himself is a very talented player. So, yeah, Sauce Gardner, great player. He's going to be a great cornerback. He's going to be the new Darrelle Revis. He's going to torment us for years.
All right, stop right there.
All right. But not as good. Not as good, even though, I mean, Sauce Gardner is as good of a – he's a better cornerback prospect than Jeff Okuda was. He's a better cornerback prospect than Stingley, in my opinion. He, because of the injuries, like Danny said, he's as good as Ramsey, like in 2016, in terms of what it was coming out of college. Not necessarily that he'll be that good in the NFL. He's as good of a cornerback prospect as he's had. So he's going to be damn good. Whatever he is, it's going to be damn good. I saw Danny. I don't know if Danny's seen this on Jets Twitter. I've seen some Jets people compare him to Cromartie.
Yes, like, I hate that.
Because apparently athletically they're very similar, is what I've heard. But yeah, so if you think he can be better than that, that's fine. So I love Sauce. There's no complaints on that. Jermaine Johnson did drop. Yes, to Danny's point, sometimes that's not a big deal. Jeremiah Owusu-Koamoa ended up being a really, really good rookie as a linebacker for the Browns. And he fell all the way to the third round, I want to say.
Was it third?
I think it was third.
Yeah, it was either late second or third. And then
Browns in the second, I believe.
Because he fell late. Like, he fell very, very late. I'm looking it up right now. Oh, yeah, it was the second.
I think it was 52nd overall, I want to say.
Yeah, it was late second. It was late
Ronnie,
second.
Yeah. Ronnie Perkins, to stay on the same thing with AFC East, he fell as well, which I have time to talk about that later. But he was another guy that fell, and he was like 97th or 99th for the Patriots last year. But yeah. What was I going to say? I just want to give one quick take about the Jets before we get back to you guys.
Sure.
My thing with this team is, though, it has the tools. I think it's just now up to Zach Wilson to see if he can make that second-year leap. That's my big thing.
Yeah, as a Jet fan, man, like you know it's all on Zach this year. You know, they finally gave him a serviceable O-line, you know, probably better than serviceable, depending on how Mekhi Becton comes back. He actually has, you know, three options at a wide receiver that are legitimate NFL fucking wide receivers. They brought in two tight ends, drafted one who I'm really high on, Jeremy Ruckert, that are legit NFL players. Yeah, that are legit NFL players. Braxton Berrios is one of the best specialty players, like swift gadget players in the league. So he has a chance. It's on him. It's on him to make that second year jump. The defense, we have finally have pass rushers. We have Carl Lawson coming back, who was abusing Mekhi Becton every day in training camp last year and was going to have a fucking breakout season.
Is Vinny Curry still there?
Yeah, Vinny Curry. We'll see if he even makes the roster. Who cares? You know, you got Jermaine Johnson. You got a brand new secondary now with DJ Reed, who had excellent numbers in Seattle.
He did.
You got Jordan Whitehead. And, you know, so you're really just missing a linebacker next to C.J. Mosley and a cover safety. That's really it, you know?
But it should be pointed out, though, with Jermaine Johnson, yes, it's true that a guy can fall in the draft and it's no big deal, as we saw with J.O.K. But, you know, apparently the rumor is you never want to overly substantiate this stuff because you don't know what's true and what's not true. There's some rumors that it was character-related. And, you know, a character flaw prospect going to the New York market hasn't always worked out great, but yes, from a talent perspective, I saw him up close. Like, he played at FSU. Like, I saw the torment that he laid on. Like, he's a very, very talented player. And it is all about Zach. It's just, but do you think this defense can come together that quickly? Because this is the argument I made before my Dolphins in 2020. And granted, I ended up being wrong on this, but you have all these new pieces that are coming in together all at once. I know Carl Lawson was in training camp, but he didn't play in the regular season. Lawson, new. Jermaine Johnson is new. Jordan Whitehead is new. Sauce is new. DJ Reader is new. Like, isn't this – that's a lot. That's a lot to fix a defense that was among the worst in the NFL last year. So what if it's a situation where Zach does take a step forward, but you're still kind of playing shootouts every week, you know? And that's how you end up winning 6-7 games.
Yeah, and we'll absolutely take a season like that. See, the thing is – we also didn't catch any breaks from the NFL's schedule makers. You know, that their first, what was it, 8 games are brutal. Yeah. Brutal. It softens up at the end. But, you know, to open up in Baltimore or against Baltimore, that's probably the worst matchup all season. You know, we might get blown the fuck out in that game. So,
AFC North open.
If there, yeah, the whole NFC, AFC North for the first 4 weeks. So, I mean, if there is a time to get your ass beat and learn, I guess it is against these teams. But at the same time, we had the youngest defense last year that also got significant reps. So these young guys that have to play meaningful snaps have that NFL experience now. They're not, you know, they're not going to be forced in day one and have to learn on the job. Like, they kind of know the defense already. It's going to be a struggle. It will probably be a little bit of a struggle, but like Big Rat said, if it's a shootout every week, I'm fine with that. I'm way okay with that. I'd rather have the offense be great and the defense suck for a little bit than the other way around.
Big 12 football coming to MetLife Stadium. I'm looking at the schedule here, and there's one key thing that I really point out where I'm really interested to see how they do, and that's their late October to mid-November, where it literally goes Patriots, Bills, bye week, Patriots. Because we obviously know the Jets, if you want to improve, I don't think you can go 0-6 in division. I think even I know this is going to sound bad. I don't know how Dan's going to take this. If they can go 2-4 or 3-3, you know, win a couple of those divisional games, whether it be, hey, split against the Patriots, help, even maybe get lucky and beat the Bills. Because remember, the Bills lost to Jacksonville last year, who I still think are a worse team than the Jets this year. Or even split against Miami. If you could split against one of those three teams, that's an improvement for me for the Jets. You just cannot afford to go 0-6 or 1-5 against your own division.
Yeah, absolutely. I would never be offended about your statement, bro. We've been 0-12 against the AFC East, I think, the past 2 years. But I'm 100% expecting to split with the Dolphins and to split with the Patriots. 100%. I think the Patriots got worse, and I think, like I said, the Dolphins overrated. Give me the ADAT stats on Tyreek all you want. Obviously, they weren't playing. They were scared of him going deep on them, so they were going to give up the underneath. That's why his numbers look like that. So go ahead.
Should have gone 1-11, but Joe Flacco shit the bed in the fourth quarter of that Monday night game.
So clearly, as everyone has heard, Big Red is in for a rude awakening on Tyreek Hill this year. But just putting it out there.
But the problem is, this is the big problem. Everyone says this. I've seen this too. okay, well, we don't trust Tua to beat us deep, so we're just going to play single coverage and, like, dare him to hit Tyreek Hill over the top. You have Jalen Waddle on the other side. That's the problem. You have two guys who scare you like that. You have no choice but to give up that stuff because there's too many different ways that you can lose like that. Like, that's why the combination is so deadly. Like, this is not like fucking Mecole Hardman, who's not even playing, who wasn't even playing every snap, who was playing a minuscule percentage of snaps on the field. This is a significantly different threat. Waddle's going to play every snap every week. Like, that's why the coverages will be different. And look, I've told you guys this before. Tua doesn't throw deep often. When he throws over 20 yards, he's like 14 for 29, two touchdowns and one pick. It's like the third best completion percentage amongst all quarterbacks aside from Herbert and Kyler Murray. Like, when he throws deep, it's fine. They just don't do it often. But when it happens, he's not throwing seven picks every time it happens. That's the big misunderstanding with his deep percentage.
I would love to see those numbers off of non-play action.
It's fine. There's highlights of it on YouTube. There's Dolphin fans that compile every single 20-plus yard attempt from Tua. Like, most people think his interceptions come from throwing down the field because they cite that stat. Every pass he throws over 10 yards and the interception numbers from that. Most of his interceptions are in the intermediate range. They're in the intermediate range over the middle of the field. They're not the deep shots. No, almost his deep shots are either catches, incomplete, or touchdowns. He rarely throws like a 40-yard pick or something like that.
I mean, the only highlights I've seen is Tyreek Hill catching underthrown balls put up by the Dolphins media.
The Dolphins media rightfully got flamed by their own fan base for that. Like, they fucked up. That was their fault.
What did Marcel do now? Even the with Miami here, I just want to look at their schedule quickly because there's another portion of it that I really want to see how they come out, and that's December, because I know you obviously have a Christmas Day, but it's those three road games at San Francisco, at LA, and at Buffalo, because that's like weather affected for you guys, plus two. That's the time of year where we know the Dolphins to usually, you know what, beat the Chargers, but then shit the bed against the Bills. It's usually the Patriots where they beat them. And then, like, I always remember the two games. There was one where New England went down to Miami in, like, mid-December, and then the U.S. went to Buffalo and laid an egg. And then, obviously, there was the miracle Miami game. Next week, keep your season alive. Dalvin Cook whooped your ass. Yep. So, those are what that's just when I'm just looking at the Miami schedule right there. And then the week four game against the Cincinnati Bengals, because I know Danny's saying that this year New England's going to be a disappointment. I want to ask you guys something, though, and I want you to see how I feel. Do you think the Cincinnati Bengals could potentially be a team where if they don't live up to expectations, it could be a disappointment? Like, do you think they're in a Super Bowl or bust kind of season? Or do you think if it's like they win a wild card, it's going to be disappointing considering how well they were last year?
It's definitely not Super Bowl or bust because this is very hard to get back to the Super Bowl back-to-back years. And they did it super prematurely, by the way. So
yeah.
They're going to, of course, have unfair expectations on them. Even Joe Burrow, you know, I was just listening to the Full Send podcast that he was just on today. And he was even surprised that the team – he did not believe the team was going to be a Super Bowl team. So, I mean, I think a playoff season is successful for them. They can't miss the playoffs, though, in my opinion.
A good comparison in the NBA – someone posted this after the playoffs last year, and I thought it was very prescient. Someone said this about the Atlanta Hawks. They were like a bad team forever. And then made a deep run to the Eastern Conference Finals. They're tied 2-2 in the series with Milwaukee, and then Giannis gets hurt. Like, they didn't make the finals, but a lot of their fans thought, holy shit, like, they're actually going to do it. And someone said the hardest thing for this team, this young team that's significantly overachieved, they have to realize that next year they start 0-0. They have to realize that none of that momentum guarantees anything when you overperform with the roster. And you kind of saw with the Hawks, they were more of a 500 team, and that – was kind of hard on the players. They talked about this. Like, it was hard to kind of like come to grips with the fact that, oh, we weren't as good as we thought we were. The Jaguars, they had other problems, of course, like the quarterback situation with Blake Bortles and everything. But there was a lot of infighting amongst that team when they started out 3-4. You start out 3-4 and the veterans are mad and everyone's upset because you have like this Super Bowl expectation that's unrealistic. And so you wonder if the Bengals can kind of handle the weight of those fallen expectations and if that could tank their season or not. I think they're still going to be a good team. But, yeah, I mean, the facts of the matter is their division is better. The Ravens are going to be a better version of themselves next year, whatever that is. Like, just literally bringing back the same roster and everyone getting healthier.
Drafted really well, by the way, too. I want to add that. I really like even their day two picks. I really like them getting David Ojabo and also Travis Jones, adding in – you get that Mike McDonald Michigan defense coming in as well.
And when Mike McDonald went to Michigan, that's when their defense finally took the next step. That's when they finally beat Ohio State. They finally made the college football playoff. He's that good of an impact defensive coordinator. And you kind of saw with Wink Martindale, even though I think he'll do a good job with the Giants, I kind of know this with Brian Flores too, and I know this with Manny Diaz at Miami. These defensive coaches that just call blitzes nonstop, it destroys bad quarterbacks. Bad quarterbacks have no chance. Like, that's why Danny's Jets would always get their asses kicked by B-Flow. Like, always. Just because it was just, boom, send the house. And even though his Jets played very well in that second game in the first half, in that fourth quarter, in that December game, you kind of saw their offense just kind of fell apart because the blitz protection, they just could not keep up with it. And when you play elite quarterbacks, though, you get lit up. Elite quarterbacks just know, like, it's like blitzing Brady. It's like they just know, like, to get rid of the ball quickly, find the open spots. And you kind of saw that with Wink Martindale. Like, it was really good against a lot of bums. But, man, against Joe Burrow, like, you just can't blitz him nonstop. And now that you have that kind of caliber quarterback in your division, you need to make a change. So I think the Mike McDonald change is going to help them a lot. Unfortunately, the Browns, I think, got better for, you know, we don't have to give them too much attention, but you understand why. And yeah, the Steelers are probably going to be the same. I know they're projected to finish last in the division, but they're going to win, what, like 7-8 games? Like, Mike Tomlin's never had a losing season. It's hard. It's going to be hard for the Bengals to do that again.
I want to get a take about the Steelers quickly. I still think they can be, and this is going to sound crazy, I still think they can be in the playoff conversation because they remind me a lot of what last year was. I think there's a few games that the defense can steal. And if they can get decent to average quarterback play, whether it's Kenny Pickett or I like to kiss titties Trubisky, whether it's one of those two, just don't do anything stupid. This can be a team. I don't think they can make the playoffs, but they're going to be that team that you're in it at Christmas time. That's what I think. I like the 7-8 win total for them. I think there's going to be a couple games down the stretch where they lose. But even I look at Cincinnati's schedule here because, look, it's that time of year we get to dissect it. Their December to January is not easy. It's versus the Chiefs, versus the Browns, at the Buccaneers, at the Patriots, versus the Bills, and versus the Ravens. That's not easy to end the season. So, and because all those teams, even we obviously know Cleveland, we still have to wait and see what's going to happen there. But Chiefs, Bucs, Pats, Bills, Ravens are all teams that are going to be in those playoff conversations. Now, obviously, look, the Patriots lost some key players from this year. We can talk about it later, but those are all teams you're going to look at as in the playoffs or in the playoff hunt, at least.
Yeah, with the Bengals and with my Dolphins, like, it's the same thing with those December schedules. To make the playoffs, you have to have that game that you steal. The game where you're on the road against an above 500 team and you win like a field goal game. That usually determines who goes to the playoffs. The teams that could, like, great example, the Raiders, what they did to the Cowboys on Thanksgiving. That is the classic game that you take away in a very close one against, you're the underdog, you're against a good team. Like, everyone calls it a schedule loss on paper. That's the game that you steal. That is the difference between going 9-8 and making the playoffs. So, like, something like that is something that the Bengals and the Dolphins also are going to have to do. The Dolphin fans are just hoping that it's that San Francisco game, hoping that either they still have Jimmy or Trey Lance maybe struggles his first year as a starter. And obviously the Mike McDaniel intel, because he also has – it's not just McDaniel. They have a few coaches from that coaching staff too, with Wes Welker and John Embry, et cetera. They're kind of hoping that can kind of give them an advantage on the road game, you know. So something like that is the game you have to steal.
It's like the Patriots last year in that Monday Night Football game that a lot of people hated where McAvoy threw three passes. But it's the same thing where, look, you go into someone's building, you steal a game. Like, even, hell, look at last year in that Sunday Night Football game when the Saints went into the Buccaneers, won 9-0. Obviously, look, they lost to Miami the next week. We know all about that. But games like that, every team needs. You need that win where it's like you weren't supposed to do that. Even with New England last year, I can think of other games like the whomping they laid on Cleveland, 45 unanswered points. Like, there's – I completely agree with that take where it's like, look, if you want to win, like, even too for – I want to pull up the Jets schedule here just for Danny so we can get him back in the comments for conversation. But and also, too, I'm going to say this. Whoever decided to put Jets and Jags Week 16 on Thursday Night Football, do that in September or October. Don't do that around Christmas time.
I don't get it.
Okay, Jesus Christ, the Jets, like, have a very easy end of the season. Like, Lions, Jags, and Seahawks are three of their
– And that's what I'm saying. If you could steal, you know, one of those first – a couple of those first eight games, you know, and you go into your bye, you know, sitting with, like, two or three wins, you know, you can potentially still be in that picture, man. You know, you could easily make up ground on some of like the Lions, the, you know, some of these weaker teams. So, I mean, like I said, I'm thrilled with an 8-win season. That's fine with me. You know, I'm not expecting playoffs this year, but we'll see, man.
And like to Danny's point, because I think Danny told this to me over Twitter that like he thinks the Dolphins are going to start like 1-3 or 0-4 because they go home to Patriots, at Baltimore, home to Bills, at Bengals on a short week. Look, at Bengals on Thursday Night Football, that's a loss. Like the road Thursday night game is a nightmare for any team. The Dolphins routinely get destroyed in that spot. They don't just lose, they lose big. And playing the Bengals on Thursday night on the road is just awful. Like that is the worst possible schedule luck you can get. So they'll probably lose that game, and they'll probably lose at Baltimore week two. So that's why I keep saying like home to Buffalo. I don't know if you consider that a steal because they're at home, but they are underdogs. But yes, they are at home, but they are going to be underdogs. That's why that game kind of defines their season. It's not just, oh, you lost to Buffalo again. It's no, that's the difference between going 2-2. You're okay. Things are stable. Versus going 1-3 or 0-4, and now things are kind of starting to tailspin a little bit. So, yeah, early season steals count too, to Danny's point. Like, stealing games in September and October go a long way.
Exactly. Like, even I look at the Patriots schedule here, and I see Steelers and Dolphins. I think that can either be 1-0 or 2-2, or 2-0 or 1-1. It's that versus Ravens and at Packers game for them that I see where it's if you can get out of that 1-1, especially going to Lambeau, and I like the fact they're going to Lambeau in prime football weather, early October. Not too hot, not too cold. That's what I like. And then even with them, for me, for the Pats, it's like I said to you guys before off air, I don't know how the hell they managed to get 4 primetime games in a row. Obviously, people still love us. But they got to go 2-2, I think, at worst-case scenario down that stretch because you're 3 of those 4 are on the road. And by that time, we try to figure out teams, but I'm already circling that week 15 Raiders Sunday Night Football as a loss just because of McDaniels. That's why the former assistant trick coming back to bite him in the ass.
The primetime schedule thing drives me crazy because it's like they always do it based off last year's win total. They never project forward. And like, that's why like when teams are on the rise, like the Bengals last year, even though sure, no one expected them to make a Super Bowl run, but people knew they'd get better. People knew they'd improve and you never see them in primetime ever. Yeah. And I remember this very clearly when the Dolphins made the playoffs in 2016 as a 10-6 team. And they weren't a strong playoff team. They made the playoffs with a losing record. Tannehill tore his ACL in training camp. And they had 5 primetime games. And it was very frustrating as a fan because you're watching primetime games, you're losing every single one of them, and you're getting killed on Twitter. Like, this team sucks. Why do we have to keep watching them? And I'm not saying the Patriots are going to be that bad, but you would think the NFL would project forward a little bit. They did with Denver. But they didn't really with everyone else. And giving the Patriots 4 primetime games is basically they were a playoff team last year, so we got to put them on national TV a lot. That's basically
How many primetime games do the Bears and Steelers have this year?
The Bears have 3. I know that. One of them is week. The Bears have – well, I feel like they do the same thing every year. You get a Bears and Packers game in primetime, and you get a Giants-Cowboys game in primetime. I feel like those are 2 matchups that are – they're either primetime or they're in the 4:25 Sunday slot.
Yeah, because Chicago's a big market too. Like they get more of a primetime advantage than other cities for that reason.
It's also an OG thing too. Yeah. The Steelers, they have 1.
They play also primetime.
1. They have 2. They have 3. They have 4. They have 5.
Oh my god, man!
So stupid.
The jokes write themselves.
One of them is on Christmas Eve against the Raiders. But there's a cool story behind it because it'll be the 50th anniversary a day later from the Immaculate Reception game. Cool. So it's kind of cool. But, like, I don't need Steelers-Colts on Monday Night Football in Week 12.
Wow, that sounds awful. Jesus.
And
that's
and Monday, they're really hyping up Monday Night Football this year. You know, like, they're really repackaged.
At Dolphins, Week 7, Sunday Night Football. Yeah,
the Brian Flores reunion. I have no idea why, of all the fun storylines the Dolphins have this year, because there's plenty. The Dolphins play the Browns, right? Deshaun Watson, Tua, very easy. The Dolphins play the Chargers and the Bengals. And yes, they did put the Bengals on primetime, but it was Thursday night. Not as juicy. The Tua versus Herbert, Tua versus Burrow, Tua versus Deshaun Watson. Of all the juicy ones they could put on Sunday Night Football, the one they fucking picked was Tua and Brian Flores. Even though he's a coach, he's not going to be in the game. He's probably not even going to be, like, interviewed all that much throughout the week. It's really, what the fuck is the juice to see Dolphins Steelers in primetime? Like, I don't get it.
Bengals Steelers 2 on Sunday Night Football. So they get the Steelers have 2 Sunday Night Football games.
That's ridiculous, man.
I think there's a certain franchises the NFL is just like, yeah. Oh, we're going to cater to them. Like, obviously, I get the Russell Wilson one for week one. Just like, look, you want a banger. And then week two, look, Bills Titans is great. I don't know what they were thinking with Eagles and Vikings. Like, I guess just like, hey, yeah. It's a playoff thing. And then Giants Cowboys. Let's see what else there is. Rams Niners week 4 could be very interesting.
And can we talk about Thanksgiving? Because me and you are on this every year, and I was so upset because I think everyone knows the story of the fake Twitter account that was doing schedule leaks.
Yep.
That was not real, but he got 10,000
just and the day of, he's just like, fuck you all. I was just trolling the entire time.
I was so fucking pissed because for his Thanksgiving slate that he leaked, I forget the Bills were playing. I mean, not the Bills. The Lions were playing like Washington or something like that. But the Cowboys were playing the Bengals, and the Thanksgiving night game was Bills Ravens. And I'm like, oh my god, finally a great Thanksgiving slate. And instead, we get Giants Cowboys and
Bills Lions.
Bills Lions and Patriots Vikings. With all due respect,
that's gonna be a fucking Big 12 football game. That's what that game's gonna be. It's like what Danny was saying, high scoring shootout. That's going to be Texas versus Oklahoma on Thanksgiving night.
Okay, but people want to see Colt McCoy versus Kyler Murray in Texas, Oklahoma. They don't want to see Mac Jones versus Kirk Cousins on Thanksgiving.
No.
I'll take it for what it is, but I even agree with you too. Like, even Giants, Cowboys, like, I got into it because Giants fans were coming at me, or like my buddy Giants fans, Matt Lorenzo, was coming at me because I said I was excited for every Thanksgiving game but Giants Cowboys, where I'm like right in the middle. They always do this when Fox gets the Dallas game. They always just get lazy and throw an NFC East team in. Like last year, I actually want to say something. I called it being Raiders Cowboys last year. I said that's a classic. That's two classic teams. I would make for a good game. It turned out to be a really good game too.
One of the best games of the year. Yeah.
But even looking on the rest of the games for what you could have put in that slot, there's nothing else. Oh, here's a good one you could have put Thanksgiving night: Rams versus Chiefs.
That would have been great.
Like, I love playing on Thanksgiving. Don't get me wrong, but yeah, I know what you mean. And you know how the Lions have 0 Thanksgiving games? Not 0 Thanksgiving games, excuse me. They have 0 primetime?
Yeah.
Mike Florio made a really good point about this. He said, for the Lions, I think you'd rather be the 12:30 Thanksgiving game, which I think is like in the top 5, yeah. I think it is, for watched all year, than a week 3 Monday Night Football game where the viewership's not going to be as high.
Yeah, I think Cowboys Raiders last year was the most viewed game of the year, of every year.
Wow.
Yeah, that's why the Cowboys also too. For as mad I was too for the fact that it's Cowboys Bucks on that Sunday Night Football game. I know we love to rag on them, but you can't argue against the America's Team narrative, and then also too the fact that they are a moneymaker in the NFL. But I will add this: Dallas getting a second NFL team, absolutely not. No. If you're gonna go to Texas again, go to San Antonio.
And you are right that, and I do want to address the Dallas thing, but you are right that Thanksgiving should be viewed, yes, in its own special status. Like the Dolphins too. Like, I don't think it's this way yet, but I think the trend is slowly accelerating this way with the NFL over time. Christmas Day is starting to matter, and the Dolphins have a home Christmas Day game against Green Bay.
They killed the NBA in ratings last year with Browns and Packers. They killed the NBA. It was like 25 million views for that Packers Browns game.
There was one NBA executive that even speculated the NBA might start pulling back on Christmas. Not like give it up entirely, but maybe not have as many
weaker matchups.
Yeah. Because they know the NBA, unlike the NHL, if I could rag on the NHL, because they put the Panthers and the Heat same day for all their games, like over the next 2 weeks, which is asinine. Unlike the NHL, the NBA knows their place. They know that the NFL is king and they're going to leave it alone. So. Yeah, like Christmas Day football, I think we're not there because Thanksgiving NFL just has such a strong tradition. It's going to take a while to match that. But we're going to start seeing Christmas Day NFL is going to start to matter. Like, it's going to be like a look for that on the schedule. What is the Christmas Day game? That's going to be a new thing.
I think unless it's on a Tuesday or a Wednesday, but I even think still maybe – I think with the pandemic even, I feel like they could get into a habit where they're like, you know what, hey, we can put a game here or there. Like, because Christmas is on a Monday next year. Even the slate this year, like Packers, Dolphins, okay, you can take it for what it is. But Rams and Broncos and Cardinals, Bucks are two games with a lot of talent. Like, obviously, look, you know who the better teams are there, but you got talent in all six games. That's something that they want. Even the games of the day before, well, actually, I'm looking at the day before Christmas Eve, and oof, there's some ugly ones. Like the 425, there's one game, and it's Eagles-Cowboys. Like, the rest of the games for the 1 o'clock slot, it's not a lot of attractive. Like, you have the Bills and the Bears, which give me the Bills spread on that one. And then the Monday nighter is Chargers Colts that week, which that could be a playoff game. That could be a playoff eliminator game.
Yep, very much so.
And even the one thing I got to wonder this year too is the fact that the, because I'm going to ask you, I know Danny's not too big as a college guy, but you're a big college guy, and I'm kind of on the, I'm not like a big college fan, but I follow it enough to know a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
With them playing games on January 1st, do you think that'll impact the New Year's Six and like the Rose Bowl and stuff like that? Or do you think it's like, where do you see that going? Or do you think they could move the game to Monday?
I mean, they could get a little flexible with it and start pivoting around the Saturday game. But like, unlike the NBA, like those games do really well. So I would think college football would want to defer and try to move around scheduling a little bit, because college football has never been a first to putting those bowl games on Mondays or Tuesdays or anything like that. They've done that for years. So I would think they'd be more flexible to move it unless it was something crazy. So yeah, I don't think it'd be too much of an issue.
True. And I'm also looking at the Monday Night Football schedule. There's not a lot of bad games in here. Like, yeah, there's Steelers Colts when we ragged on, but also late in the year, you have Saints and Bucs, Patriots Cardinals, Rams Packers week 15. That's one to really keep your eyes out on. Let's see what else there is. Cardinals Niners, not a bad option for Monday Night Football. Okay. Week 10, avoid Commanders Eagles. Ravens Saints week 9.
With Danny's favorite quarterback, Jalen Hurts.
Yeah.
Can you believe how many people are projecting them to win the NFC East now just because they signed James Bradbury?
I just like the odds. I just liked it at plus 250 when the Dallas Cowboys were still the favorite. I liked it for the odds. Like how I said, if I would have a Super Bowl future, I would do the Ravens because I think they were like plus 2200.
Yeah.
But yeah. Oh, I love the Ravens this year.
I do too. But, that's why I asked the question about the Bengals.
But was last year the start of the Lamar Jackson injuries? We don't know.
It was only four games. Like, I have a hard time, like giving it that much credence because it was only four games, you know? So I don't think so, personally.
I hope not. I love watching him, but – and it's on the contract year, so.
My biggest thing, too, is I don't have any receivers now, and I'm going to flip the script. I think Hollywood Brown has a breakout year this year because I don't think he's expected to be wide receiver one in Arizona. I'm not saying he's going to be a stud, but I think we finally see him live up to
this.
He's
got to be wide receiver one for, what, four games now, right?
Six.
Six games.
But you know what I mean, though? When D-Hop comes back, I don't think there's going to be that pressure on him to, you know, if he has bad games here or there, it's not going to be like, oh, it's this or that. He's like, how do I put this in a good context? He'll be good for fantasy depth.
He will. And he'll probably, you know, he can easily approach 1,000 yards. And as people have pointed out, D-Hop, it's one thing I've learned, like, in fantasy football the last few years. Like, guys that are hurt coming into the season or guys that are suspended to start the season, those are usually stayaways because
100%.
There's something about like you miss four games. Like if you're hurt to come into the season, you're usually never right. And like, you know, like we saw with Michael Thomas last year, it's like there are probably plenty of people who burn mid-round picks on him thinking, oh, he'll be back by week 8 or something like that. It just never comes back. So guys who are suspended, you're four games out of shape. You know, you're not in NFL shape. You can do some conditioning on the side, but you're less integrated with the playbook. And I thought this was very randomly, Griff. I watched Cam Newton do an interview with I Am Athlete, and he mentioned how, like, in football, and it's not just a Patriots thing, like, as the regular season is progressing, you're adding stuff. Like, you're learning from previous weeks. You know, you're building it around. And Cam was saying, like, that those 2 weeks he missed with COVID or whatever, he felt, like, behind in class. Like, he felt like, oh, man, like, we made all these changes that I wasn't here for, that, like, now I'm trying to process them. So even if Hopkins, like, participates in training camp, being gone for 6 weeks, there's changes to the offense. There's changing to the personnel. You might be playing with different receivers and different checks and all that stuff. So, yeah, like it makes it harder to come back and make an immediate impact. So even though he'll be back, it's only a suspension. It could be a trap. And so if he struggles, then yeah, Hollywood's gonna feast. You're right.
Yep. That week one for Arizona this year is in such a weird position though as a whole. I have a soft spot for them. But the Kyler Murray extension, but then also giving Steve Keim and Cliff Kingsbury, I think, unwarranted extensions. I don't know if you guys have listened to this, but I had the from Locked On Cardinals, Alex Clancy on here, and he really put it into good terms of, like, where the team is right now. And everything like that. So I feel like for them, they're in a big make or break year. This is a big make or break year, especially for Kyler Murray. But I feel like he'll have a contract by camp.
I hope so, because I'm very scared of him going to the Dolphins.
No, shut up. Like,
very.
Oh, my. Baseball before he does that.
I'm a Kyler fan. I've always think people kind of overrated him a little bit. I never thought he was a top five guy. I always thought he was more of a fringe top 10 guy. Like, I think he's closer to, you know, some of that bottom of the top 10, start of the next list kind of guys, like the Tannehill, Cousins, those guys. Better than those guys. But I think he's closer to them than he is to Mahomes, Rodgers, Brady. I think he's closer to that second group that I just mentioned. So I think that they need to give him an extension, because if they don't, like, look, they're obviously, no matter what I think about him, it's really hard to do better. So that's reason number one to do it. And secondly, it's just going to be a nightmare all year long. Like, it's going to be a constant stressor, because the Lamar thing is different. By all accounts, the Ravens want to pay Lamar. Lamar, like, just doesn't care. He wants to get to the fifth-year option. He wants to get to the franchise tag. And then he wants another contract on top of that, going the Kirk Cousins route, where you get, like, as much money as possible. And
you don't have an agent banging on the door for looking for one.
Yeah.
He's playing on his option this year, right?
Yeah, but the rumor is he's on his option, but he wants the tag. And then he wants to get tagged again. And then he wants to get, like, you know, the five-year guaranteed
deal. He is playing with fire, man, the way he plays.
He also doesn't have an agent. If we're talking about Lamar, Lamar does not have an agent.
That is just a terrible way to approach it, man.
Eric DaCosta said that, he said after the draft, we're ready for this whenever. Like he just has to give us a call. Like, it's all on his side of the court. But the problem is their win percentage when Lamar plays versus when he doesn't over the last 10 years is astronomical. Like, they are basically, we don't view them this way, since the 2012 Super Bowl, they are basically an average franchise when Lamar Jackson is not their starting quarterback. Like, that's what it's been for most of their time. So it's really hard to walk away from that. Even though he has an injury history and all that stuff, like, it's really hard to walk away from that. But, yeah, I think they have to get it to Kyler, because Kyler's not handling it the same way Lamar is. There will be fights. There will be agent messaging. There will be animosity. It won't be
the same. Followings on social media.
Yeah. You don't want that. You don't want to deal with that.
Yeah. One thing I want to ask both of you, if you had to pick a team from last year that won a division that's going to take a step back, who would it be and why? And I'm going to go first, and I'm going to say the Tennessee Titans.
Good pick.
I'm sorry, Treylon Burks is a great receiver, but you're not replacing A.J. Brown. That's my thing. You're not replacing A.J. Brown.
Well, can I ask – I'll let Danny go first, but I just want a clarification. When you say step back, it's obviously the team gets worse, but does it get worse but doesn't win the division? Because the Titans could get worse and still win the division, you know?
They're not going to be – I don't – like, if I had to put money on it right now, I'm not going to be coming out here and saying Titans are going to be the number one seed in the AFC again. Okay. I don't think that's going to happen. Okay. They can still win the division. I still think it's a toss-up, and I think a lot of it has to do with if a certain wide receiver that this podcast adores takes a step forward.
Yes.
I think that's a big part of that,
okay.
Which I'll talk to you later. But I just think Tennessee as a whole, I think the Tennessee Titans are kind of in that Bengals thing where they kind of peaked in 2019, and then since then it hasn't been the same. Since they went on that run where, look, they beat us with a wild card game, and then Phil came on here and had the bold take of them beating the Ravens.
Yeah.
And then, hell, they had Kansas City on the ropes in the AFC Championship game, but ever since then they haven't won a playoff game. So that's what I mean with Tennessee, where I'm just like, I can see the production going down, and I just can't see them, you know, being that team you look at with, like, you look at them scared. You know, that's why I don't view Tennessee as a threat anymore.
You gotta question if Derrick Henry is also breaking down as well. You know, there's a lot of miles on that guy. So, you know, if he's gone, Tannehill is just gonna look like fucking terrible, man. And you know, he already went for therapy this offseason because of that terrible game against the Raiders. So, you know, he lost his AJ Brown, he lost Julio, who wasn't great for them. But you know, they got Bobby Trees, he'll help them. But yeah, man, that's a great pick.
They also, one thing I want to say about Tennessee as well is I also remember, too, there was, like, sometimes Tannehill looked good, but then there was other times. There was, like, the Patriot game last year where he wasn't it.
It should be mentioned, when A.J. Brown came back, because everyone focuses on those games where Henry got hurt and Brown got hurt and, like, Tannehill struggled, and then everyone came back and all that stuff. when A.J. Brown came back, even when Derrick Henry was still hurt, and that was like first on that San Francisco 49ers Thursday night game, and then the week after when they played us, and then the week
whooped
after,
you.
Whooped us, destroyed us. And then when they played the Texans, and yes, it's the Texans, when Tannehill had one of the
Texans
best
covered.
And yeah, but Tannehill had four touchdowns. Like Tannehill was playing fine. Like the defense struggled a little more against Houston, but Tannehill played great that game. When A.J. Brown was playing, it wasn't as bad. Like that Patriots game was no Henry, no A.J. Brown, no Julio. Like that was bottom of the barrel. And yeah, Patriots destroyed him, no doubt about it.
36-13, I think the score was.
Man, they lost to the Jets without those guys. Well, they had Henry, but
I mean, the Bengals lost to the Jets too. Like, we don't hold it against them. Like, and they lost to Mike White. Well, my pick, I don't know if Danny has one, but my pick is Tampa Bay for two reasons. And yes, I know that's my brand, but I think it makes sense. I think it's either that they don't win the division, or the more likely outcome, they win the division, like you said, possibly with Tennessee, but they're closer to the four seed than they are competing for the one seed. Instead of going 13-4, they go 10-7 or 11-6.
Wow.
Yeah.
I think Godwin's ACL is going to have a huge factor in how they do there. And the fact, too, I know they got Shaq Mason, but you lost Ali Marpet and Alex Kara. You lost two really good guards. Mm-hmm. And then losing Sue up the middle on D, losing Jordan Whitehead, O.J. Howard, Gronk, Cameron Brate's your tight end one.
Yeah, their D-line for years, that was their reputation, right? Their D-line is so
head stubby. Coach.
And head – yeah, okay, that's what I was going to bring up. Like, I
think – everyone's so happy for him. I'm sorry. I think we all three see the bullshit of how Todd Bowles really is. We see it.
And look, if we're wrong, we're wrong. But I know Danny agrees with me on this one. Like, I think everyone is just – I don't think enough people are pricing that in. There's too much of this, the Jets are a bad franchise. So, you know, Todd Bowles is actually a good head coach with – no evidence. The evidence that people have is that he was a good defensive coordinator, which does not mean anything. If people are making that argument, make that argument for Dennis Allen too. Like, I don't get it. Like, it's very, 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 very weird. There's nothing.
Look at Vance Joseph.
Vance Joseph too, who's killed it as a head coach in Arizona. And when he got rumored to be the head coach of the Dolphins, everyone flamed him for it. But all of a sudden with Todd Bowles, because it's the Jets, because everyone hates Danny's team so much, it's like, oh, he's actually secretly a good coach. We just didn't really truly see it through. Like, it's
you brought his conservative play calling up where he would like just do he would, you know, he basically reminds me of a head coach of like, remember the week 18 Denver KC game when Fangio decided to kick a field goal on fourth down instead of going for it to try to tie the game? It's the same sort of play calling style where a lot of the times they're like, no, we'll play it safe. When sometimes if you want to be a successful head coach, I'm sorry, you got to take risks. Like, I know we flamed John Harbaugh for last year, what he did in that Steelers game and the Packers game, going for two and losing. But look, it's either like what Danny and I talked about on off air, because we both lost money to fucking Steph Curry last Friday night, where if you had jacked up a three and missed, you can live with it. But the fact that he went for two and lost, it is what it is. If you play the safe route, you don't know if he went in overtime. So that's my whole thing with Todd Bowles. I also think, too, this ultimately is Brady's swan song. I also don't buy for a second the whole – I just think the whole – like, the you know the talks of him and Peyton? I just don't buy it. I don't buy the Miami stuff, even though he was there for F1. I just think it was – not so much Stephen Ross. I think we talked about this before, but I'm blanking on his last name, but Bruce.
Bruce Beal.
Bruce Beal is basically going to take over for Stephen Ross one day. I think it's just that because, obviously, the Michigan connection. That's my rant on that. But with the Bucs, though, I think they'll be good, but I think you may see some spots where – like, look at last year, that game against the Rams. They were getting destroyed.
And why are we just giving them wins against the Saints? All I hear about is, oh, this division is so bad. The division is so bad. The same Saints team that keeps kicking their ass in the regular season.
38-3 when they were at the height of their franchise.
Even if they split, fine. That's still a split. That's not. They're not sweeping the Saints this year. No fucking way. So I don't understand the hype for that team. And look, just know this about the NFL. I'm not even going to make any argument about Brady, right? I do agree it's a swan song. Everything I know about sports, maybe you guys agree or disagree. Dana White always says this, UFC, for example, when you're talking about retirement, that's when you know it's over. This whole retiring and coming back thing, kind of a red flag. Like, you know, that doesn't usually go well in any sport when that happens, pro wrestling too. So that's one thing. But the defense, in today's happy NFL, is it a good thing when the only good part about your defense is your linebackers? Because their secondary was bad last year. There was injuries, sure, but their secondary He's inconsistent. Their D line is getting old. Pierre Paul, who played bad last year, is now gone. Sue is gone. So it's just Shaq Barrett, who's getting old himself, and Vita Vea. And I guess, like,
Who broke his foot? Well, that was 2 years ago, my bad.
Yeah. But so, like, how valuable is your NFL defense in 2022 when the strength of your defense is in your linebackers? Normally, it's the opposite. Normally, your D-line and your secondary are good, and your linebackers suck, but you don't care because that's the least valuable part of your defense. Like, you know, that's a cause for concern. And I think the Godwin injury is huge. A December ACL tear is different from a September ACL tear. And look, Antonio Brown had his problems, but he was good for them early in the season when they were getting all those wins. They don't beat the Cowboys without Antonio Brown. Yep. So Russell Gage is not going to have that same impact against the Cowboys in week one. He'll be fine. He won't do what Antonio Brown did against the Cowboys in week one last year. Last year, that game was a win. This year, the game's in Dallas. If that's a loss, that's how you go from 13-4 to 10-7, even if they still win the division.
Yeah, and my other thing, too, with the Saints is, and I know you said the Dennis Allen thing earlier, I called it, or I said this on Twitter a while ago, because FanDuel posted odds for comeback player of the year, and my pick right now, it was plus 850, but it's Michael Thomas. Like, wow. I think he can come back and have a really good year. I think if Jameis can be healthy, because even, too, I know he tore his ACL, but it was an October ACL tear, which means he'll be good to go for training camp. If their defense can be right and their offense can be, we'll see with Alvin Kamara, too, with his court case. But
I like getting Jarvis was a good move.
I think Jarvis was a good move. They have Chris Olave. They added Trevor Penning on their offensive line. Even though they lost Sean Payton, I still like the Dennis Allen hiring just because it's in-house and you're keeping it in the family. Like, there's nothing crazy there. So I'm not saying the Saints are going to win the division by any stretch. I feel like Matt's got a little chubby listening to this right now. But my big thing is, too, just I wouldn't be that shoo-in with the Bucs because honestly, too, here's the other thing with this division. It's like a roller coaster. You literally have Saints, Bucs, and then you do a fucking nosedive, and then you have the Panthers and the Falcons down there because, look, Big Rat, I don't know if I told you this, but I have a new Vic Fangio, and his name's Matt Rhule.
Yeah, and I do remember you were on the Fangio train early. Never forget that podcast.
Me 2020 October.
Yes. Danny, we had a podcast where us three were picking the playoffs last year. We needed one surprise playoff team. I picked the Broncos. Griff said no because he thought Fangio was going to get fired, and they picked the Raiders, and they ended up, of course.
Wow.
Yeah,
no, you make a great point about the Bucs, though. Like, I honestly think Brady did that little retirement sham to get off the Bucs. And once he had full intentions of playing football, but once he realized, there's no way out of here. It's either I'm playing for this team or I really have to go. And Brady's still good, man. You don't leave the game when you're still that good. So I think he realized that, and you know, he has to stick, you know, to the Bucs, who unfortunately, like you said, are trending down. They'll still win the division, but to answer the original question that I never got, I know we kind of talked about them already, but you know, I have the Bengals not winning the division. I have the Ravens winning the division. I think by at least two games. So as long as Lamar stays healthy, which he should, but there's always that question. I legit think they'll have the best defense in the league this year too.
Yeah, and
the running backs back too.
Yeah, and before we get into anything else, I kind of want to shift gears now to my boys because obviously we talked about both of you guys.
Yep.
For me with the Pats, because you brought up the linebacking point earlier, which was the Patriots essentially last year until they got exposed in the wild card round against the Bills. That's why – and I know that – what was I going to say? And I know that, look, there's a lot of – they went younger and faster at linebacker. They didn't draft anyone. They went a little strange with the first round pick, if you will. But I know Danny's saying they're going to be down, but I still feel like if this team, with what they had in 2020, still went 7-9 and were knocking on the playoff door up until about week 14, week 15, and also too, whooping that actually the Chargers were bad, so I'm gonna put that off as an anomaly. I still feel like I don't know if they'll make the playoffs, but I still feel like they're going to be a competitive football team, and more or less, as long as Mac doesn't regress, that's just the thing. I think if Mac doesn't regress and you're going to hate this, but I really like your boy Devontae Parker coming in here, kind of sliding up with Kendrick Bourne. There's like a not a true number one, but there's like that there. And then the running back room, too, is going to depend. Damian Harris getting disrespected FanDuel right now. I know Breece Hall is going to be great, but I just don't know why people are kind of like sleeping on Damian Harris for running back ability. And with the Pats, I think they kind of just – they'll be there. I don't know what they'll be, but I feel like they're basically going to write their own story. They're going to write their own story, and they're going to control their own destiny this year. And I still see it being a my floor is 8 wins, my ceiling's 11. It's the same as last year for me with this team.
And I should tell you that I'll let Danny talk in a second because I just wanted to comment on the Devontae thing. I do agree that stylistically the receivers kind of fit now. Like you have a prototypical big bodied X. You have Jacoby over the middle of the field. You even have Tyquan Thornton and Aguilar, like, who could stretch the field. Like, it does kind of – the pieces kind of complement each other now, which is good. Parker – look, Parker gets hurt. You'll learn this the hard way. Like, he'll have weeks where he's, like, questionable all week. He'll give you hope that he's playing, and you'll find out – you'll find out Sunday morning. Sunday morning, you'll find out he's out.
11:30, so, got it.
What?
11:30.
Yes. Very much, like, of that ilk. So I like Devontae. Devontae was, despite their reputation, like, Devontae was good for Tua. Whenever Devontae played, Tua's A dot usually rose. Like, it was always higher in the games Devontae played because he would go down the field a little more often. Despite the reputation that he doesn't throw to outside clashers, like, he was throwing to Devontae plenty when Devontae was in the lineup. But you'll see this. You'll get hurt. You'll have those games where it's like he's hurt and Aguilar's hurt, and you just have Kendrick and Jacoby, and you're like, oh, what is going on here? But I unlike Danny, I think their floor is pretty high. Like, their floor is probably what we saw in 2020, because this roster is way better than that one was. So, like, they're always good to at least – it's kind of like Tomlin. Like, it's hard to see them winning less than 8 games no matter what. So I'm not counting them out. I think they can very easily win 9 or 10 games again. They can easily win 8 games again. I think everything is on the table with them. And – last thing I'll say before I hit it to Danny, Tyquan Thornton. I've studied him for years because he's from Miami. I have him in a Debbie League. And for those who do not know, a Debbie League is a developmental league where you draft college players, and when they go to the NFL, they graduate into your NFL Dynasty League. And so I've had Tyquan Thornton for 2 years now. I followed him very closely. I think he's a good player. He's a burner. Like, that him, what he did at the Combine was not a fluke. And it's exactly what the Patriots needed. I know he is not, like, he was not ranked highly going into the draft. Like, a lot of people didn't think that he was worthy of being a second-round pick. But I always liked him. I always think he thought he was good. I wanted my Dolphins to take him on day 3 instead of Ezukanma, who they ended up taking. Like, I think he's a good player. So I would not rule out – maybe not in year 1. We see this all the time. Wide receivers new to New England, year 1 is usually a struggle. But
yeah,
I wouldn't rule that out.
It's kind of like how last year, before we get to Dan, quickly want to add, last year I know people were drafting Ramondre Stevenson in fantasy, and I kind of told him to stay away because he obviously was an exception, but I can see the same thing where he gets out there and he makes a few flash plays, but don't rely on Tyquan Thornton to win you your fantasy championship. Yeah. Danny?
Yeah, man. No, I mean, obviously when you're coached by Bill Belichick, you're always going to have a chance. You're always going to be in it. It's just that the defense, man, it's just really, really worries me. I mean, outside of Judon and the safety, like, who's really there? A lot of guys. There's a lot of question marks that have to step up.
I really like the Jabril Peppers edition. I'm going to say that right now. I think he's due for a bounce. I think he's due for a bounce back.
I like Kyle Duggar a lot. I've always liked him. Like, I always thought he was like a big physical presence in the middle of the field. I was always a big fan of his. So, you know, like, they got guys. Like, they got my guy Godchow, like Ronnie Perkins, like when he drafted last year. They have some players.
And also,
too, question marks, though. They have to hit, you know what I'm saying? Because, I mean, obviously the scheme's always going to be there. Belichick's always going to be a defensive genius. But are the players going to be able to perform that? Are they going to be able to come through? You know, and that's just on one side of the ball. You know, I also think Mac's going to regress, but that's another story.
But it's really cornerbacks, right? Like, that's what it is? Like, it's corner. Because, like,
oh, absolutely. And yeah. Linebackers.
Because, like, McCourty, Duggar, and Adrian Phillips, that's as good as most teams have at safety.
Yeah, our safety depth's not an issue. Adrian Phillips, too, I'm going to add this, is on a sweetheart of a contract. I think it's like $9 million total he's making. I woke up to that on New Year's Day. That was a really, really good contract for him. Linebacker, they completely tore it down. Kyle Van Noy went to the Chargers. Hightower's not even signed at the moment. One of my favorite Patriots of all time. Two great Super Bowl plays, I might add. But the thing is, too, that's the one thing that worries me. Is cornerback, but I do like the safety room. Linebacking, Cameron McGrone as well, they're really high on. He obviously tore his ACL in November of 2020, so last year was a redshirt rookie year for him. Didn't play at all. And my thing, too, is with them, I said this on Twitter, and I got kind of lashback from it. I think Jonnu Smith is going to have a breakout year. I said explode. Yeah, it was a little out of context, but I can see Jonnu Smith exploding, especially because I think this year I'm not, I can't ever say this again because I don't think we're ever going to see a Gronk and Hernandez connection again. Like the caliber.
Don't do it, man. Don't do it. Don't do it.
Hey, Hunter Henry had a good year. Like, it's not like Hunter Henry was bad. Like, Hunter
Henry, when Martellus Bennett was on the Patriots is where I was going with.
That's fine. But, you know,
where'd you think I was going?
I thought you were going to say maybe a step below them.
No, 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 no. I call them the Boston Tea Party. T-E. Well, no A. Boston Tea Party, no A. That's always up here. Those two were great. My biggest what if in the NFL is what if Aaron Hernandez didn't kill Odin Lloyd and everything like that. He just signed a monster contract. That's my biggest what if in the NFL, for as dark as it is.
And
I think this year, Hunter Henry, I think, will have a similar year. I just think Jonnu Smith, with no fullback, he's going to be a lot more in the passing game than the protection game.
And the thing is, what are they even doing at offensive coordinator? Like, what playbook are they playing on right now?
I'm letting you. Can you correct this if I'm wrong? The meme that I'm reading, like on NFL Twitter, and you know I'm a little involved in Patriots Twitter. That no one knows what coaches are calling plays for either side of the ball, or something along those lines.
They're honestly playing. They're like, I gotta see it. I think it was on Monday, but they're all basically playing a game of like, we don't know who, but we feel like the following is going to apply. Like, I saw him do it. I saw Andrew Callahan do it. They're remaining very close to the chest. They even did this with their scouting and player personnel department, where obviously Dave Ziegler went to the Raiders. And then, we have these things called do your job videos, where basically we profile different people. They did the equipment staff. Yeah. They did Josh McDaniels. They've done a few other people. They even did like the film guys. And then for this video on what scouts do, it literally said Matt Groh, director of player personnel. And so everyone in Patriots land went, oh, so I guess Matt Groh got the job. It's literally going to be that. In August, it's just going to be like the file sheet's going to go out from the media relations. Shout Stacey James, one of the best in the game to do it, is going to basically show the media the guidebook at training camp. And I'm going to see all the tweets of everyone being like, oh, so here are the official titles. That's the thing. It's just so close to the vest. They don't want anything getting out. The only thing that's there is that the defensive roles and the fact that Joe Judge is an offensive assistant. That's all his title is for right now. But also, you got to look at it. Quarterbacks coach in Vegas. Wide receivers coach now in Vegas. There's a couple other people that are in Vegas. The only offensive coach that's consistent from last year is Ivan Fears, who's been with the Patriots since the 90s.
So,
and was rumored to retire.
Just hire Adam Gase already, man. Come on.
Could you have a world where Joe Judge and Matt Patricia are the co-offensive coordinators? Is that an option?
I mean, who is it? There was someone. I think it was Josh McDaniels coached like 3 years of defense before he took over as quarterback's coach. So it's like Bill's so weird like that it would work, that he would probably do it. And I would only love it because if they succeed, Giants fans are going to be so fucking pissed because it's like we had 2 years of Joe Judge and we brought him back. And then a day later we fired him. So our fan base was pissed where John Mara had to step in and all of a sudden like that. I'm sorry. I love the dunk on Giants fans because I feel like beating us in 2 Super Bowls got them an eternity of losing on top of the boat photo.
And the defense is at least still like, Gerard Mayo has been coaching the linebackers for years and Steve Belichick does the secondary. So, and then Bill obviously has a big role. So that's at least consistent, right? Like that's going to turn around.
Yeah, exactly. That's the most consistent part. Like I'll look up the list right now of the exact titles and everything. Actually staff. So yeah, it was Josh McDaniels left, Carmen Brasillo, who was the offensive line coach, Mick Lombardi at wide receiver, and Bo Hargreaves, who was the offensive quality and quarterbacks. Right now, defensive, it is Steve Belichick is outside linebackers and safeties, and Gerard Mayo is inside linebackers. So they just say the positions, but no one's officially the DC. And, right here, this may be wrong, but, and Troy Brown's still back. And then Matt Patricia's also doing the offensive line, according to this. But this is Wikipedia. And Joe Judge right now is the quarterback's coach. So we'll see what happens. It is May 18th, but we will find out in probably, I don't know, 8 weeks from now, who's officially what.
This is hilarious. Belichick, look, me and Denny stand by everything we said. You know, Belichick, floor of 8 wins and all that stuff. Just to let you know, this reminds me so much of what the Dolphins did last year. It is so similar. Because it wasn't just – everyone knows that we had 2 offensive coordinators and everyone was joking about it with Eric Studesville and George Godsey. And, yeah, sure, I was like, look, maybe – they do do this in college football. In college football, there's co-OCs all the time. It's not that crazy. But in the NFL, with the Dolphins, it got even weirder because, like, right the week before the season started, it was rumored that Charlie Fry, the quarterback's coach, was also involved in play calling too. And that's when it got out of control. That's when it's like, this is an absolute disaster. No one knows what's going on. And thankfully, over the course of the year, it became more – I think over the course of the year, it basically just got narrowed down to God's he calls the plays. And that's what it was by the end. So, yes, you'll find out eventually. It is funny. And my Dolphins were dunked on for this. So it's only fair to say it sounds kind of stupid. But hopefully it will.
It does.
It's a bad process, man.
It's a bad process. And also, the other thing I will say too, and this got kind of laughed at, but – I still remember when we drafted Bailey Zappe, I kind of went, what the fuck? But then I realized, well, for one of two things. One, it started a debate in Boston sports where everyone's saying, oh, do they believe in Mac Jones? Which my majority of NFL Network surely went, they love Mac. Bailey Zappi's there because they knew Jared Stidham was not going to work out. Bailey Zappi's the guy you draft for long term. You need depth options. Like, I even remember I was pumped about getting Brian Hoyer, but I feel like when he retires, Brian Hoyer could easily become the quarterback's coach or the offensive coordinator of this team. Just he's been there, he's done it. He owns a house in Mass. And what was the other thing I was going to say? Yeah, this it's a very intriguing spot with the Patriots, but I still look at 23 or 24 because next year, look, and also that's the other thing too with a lot of people in Pat's Twitter are like, oh, why are we spending? Why do we lose this? Why do we do that? Look, you don't have magical money come around every year. Next year, however, though, when the cap goes up, the Patriots have.
Yeah.
They have a lot to spend again. So we'll see what happens. But even next year, they can get out of the Nelson Aguilar contract. No problem. This is the last year of it. It's just the dead cap hit for it would have been insane this year if they did.
And I'll give Max some love. I know I'm very hard on him on the show, as is Danny. And I think rightfully so, just because from our perspective, that midseason point where the Patriots were like the one seed,
yeah.
It felt like people were just getting carried away. And any debate to make him rookie of the year over Ja'Marr Chase, I don't give a fuck how important quarterback is. That would have been horrible. Like, horrible. And thankfully, by the end, it was obvious. But still, there was that debate mid-season.
I'm going to cut you off for a second. I palmerishly still had him in there until the Chiefs game week 17 when Ja'Marr Chase went sicko mode against Kansas City. After that game, I'm like, yeah, I can't bullshit anymore. It's Chase's award.
I will say, to Mac Jones's credit, like, me and Danny have questions about his upside. And some of New England does too. I hear some of that chatter. It's very, let me tell you, man, everything that's going on up there is very similar to what I've gone through the past year. Like, all of it. The offensive coaches, the questions about the quarterback, it just sounds so similar, the whole script. Even as similar as cutting Kyle Van Noy. It's like following everything to a T. But the give Mac credit in the sense of he is at worst a high floor quarterback. So he's not going to be the kind of guy that's going to have more interceptions than touchdowns and lead you to a 5-win season. Like, he's always going to be at least solid. And that is to his credit, that he'll at worst be like a 22 touchdown, 10 interception quarterback, no matter what. So
Kirk Cousins.
Hey, I said on the draft show in 2021, and Markeem solemnly agreed with me. And this was before he was a Patriot, when I thought he was going to San Francisco. His ceiling was Kirk Cousins in Washington. I don't know if he'll ever be a top 10 quarterback, but he can be right now in that Derek Carr quarter category where I see some people put Derek Carr in their top 10 when I say immediately stop it. But he can be in that 11 to 16 window in that top tier of NFL quarterback where I feel like you can feel comfortable with him as your starter year in and year out. Now he's not going to, you know, be that guy like we see Josh Allen right now. Obviously, we know Josh Allen is that guy. Like I said, he won the PR battle today too with stuff going on in Buffalo. If Mac can come in here and be solid and, you know what, win a few games and maybe, you know what, go deep in the playoffs once or twice, it's good. But I think more than anything, it's more than him, it's going to matter what they do to build around him. I think now you build to his strengths more than his weaknesses.
And I'm sure this comes up in Boston all the time. He's already better than Brady was his first year, and that was good enough to win a Super Bowl. And yes, Brady took
steps. Oh, my God.
He is. What?
Grim, no, that's fine. That's fine. But, like, come on, man. Of course he's supposed to be better than a sixth-round pick.
Well, the thing about this, too, though, Brady, the 2001 season may never happen if Mo Lewis of the New York Jets doesn't murder or nearly kill Drew Bledsoe. Literally, Drew Bledsoe was on his deathbed in Mass General.
And hey, look, to your credit, like, because I get this flack from people all the time. It's like, oh, well, there's a world where Tua is only Jimmy G. And it's like, well, Jimmy G with this team, like a Jimmy G caliber quarterback with a good roster can get you to the Super Bowl. And sure, you can't do that for 10 years. I understand that. But like, fine. Like, we'll be in a Super Bowl in a year or two. Like, where I've fucking been, where Danny's fucking been, we'll take that. Like, we're not spoiled like San Francisco or New England. Like, that to us would mean everything. That would be like a crowning moment in our lives.
To go from
Shut the fuck up. Go, Griff.
The one thing I was going to say too about San, I just wanted to go on San Francisco quickly. Man, to go from Mike LaFleur to Mike McDaniel to Anthony Lynn and Brian Greasy, if Trey Lance is their starter, I think there's going to be a lot of growing pains on that football team.
Peter Schrager, he was on, I think he was with Bill Simmons. He did the Bill Simmons podcast, which is strange, obviously, because Bill's doing heavy basketball this time of the year.
Yeah.
But he had Peter Schrager on, and Schrager said he really doesn't think San Francisco will sell Jimmy G at a discount, and they won't outright cut him. Like, it's either he is on the team or they get a good pick for him. Yeah. He really believes they will not cut him. They will not trade him for a 6-round pick just so Trey Lance can start. It's genuinely, he's either on the team or they get a good pick and nothing else in between. So if they never,
I think he's starting for them.
That we're getting more and more closer to that. It could be a situation. Do you remember last year when they lost to the Colts on Sunday Night Football and they were like 3-5 and people were wondering, is this where you do the switch? It could be that again this year, but this time they actually make the switch. Like, he's the starter week one. Everyone overreacts and is critical of Trey Lance. And then by week 8, this time they actually give it to Trey Lance and give it to him full time.
I completely see that too. One other quick game I wanted to play with you guys before we got out of here today. Sure. I know obviously I said Matt Rhule earlier for hot seat, but if you had to guess one coach right now that's potentially going to be on the hot seat going into the year, and I'll let one of you two go first, who would it be and why?
I always go first. Danny gets to go first. We can't say can't say Matt Rhule. That's too obvious.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Not obvious.
I would say a Pete Carroll retirement, maybe. Does that count?
You know what? I was gonna say no, but I'm in a good mood, so I'll say yes.
Like a little wink, wink retirement, where like, yeah, you know, this is run its course. You know, this is what it's gonna be. We gotta go another direction, but we'll let you retire.
Dave Gettleman style. Yeah, pissed off Giants fans, where it's like, yo, fuck you. You don't deserve to retire. It's like, yeah, let the man retire.
I'm going to get ballsy, and I got two interesting ones, I think. I like both in different ways. So, okay, three surprises. The first one's ridiculous, but I'm going to throw it out there for fun. Lovie Smith, because the Texans are the Texans, and they just, like, say, fuck this, and, like, finally hire Josh McCown. Like, we only did this because of the Brian Flores lawsuit. We're finally hiring Josh McCown, et cetera. But that's kind of a joke answer. But you guys can also kind of see it. Yeah. So
to hire Josh McCown.
The second, Robert Saleh, if he royally implodes, because if he wins 4 games again, I don't think he's coming back. I agree with Danny. They're going to win more than that. They're going to grow and all that. I don't know if he survives 2 4-win seasons, though. I really don't. Like, now with Woody Johnson and the Jets, that's interesting. A young guy, we see coaches get fired after 2 years. It happens all the time. So just putting that in the back of your mind. The third one that I think is more legitimate, that I think no one is talking about, but the argument becomes a lot stronger next December. What about Ron Rivera? Hear me out. They finished last in their division, right? Most people are expecting that. I think they could be better than that, but most people think they'll be last in the division. Let's say they go 5-12. This is his resume. 7-9, 7-10, 5-12. Sure, you made the playoffs. You made the playoffs in like the worst division in NFL history his first year, in the COVID year. 7-9, 7-10, 5-12. That gets you fired in a lot of places after 3 years. Something to think about.
Something to think about. I agree with the Robert Saleh one too. I think if Zach doesn't take that next level, if we see the same Zach we saw in 2021. My one question is, I wanted to ask Danny about this. Where would Joe Douglas stand if they had a season like that? Do you think he'd be gone, or do you think he's kind of safe for right now?
I think you would have to clean the house if they went that route, because, you know, you can't be trusted to take another quarterback. You took one at number 2 overall. If you're going 4 and whatever, you clearly flopped. So I think they would clean house. I don't think this scenario is real in any way. So I'm not even going to pay light to it.
But Danny, it's not real in the sense that you don't think they'll win 4 games, but can you, like, the conditional probability, if they win 4 games,
If they won four games, they're non-competitive, and Zach Wilson is a total bust. Yes, that's where I would make the move. I mean, now, if they're winning four games, they're in every game, they're shooting out. Zach Wilson looks like, you know, the quarterback that he's supposed to be, or just missing some things on defense. You got, you know, it's an injury riddled year. That's a little different.
Like I could do the same here. Like if the Dolphins go 2-15 or something crazy like that, Greer would have to be fired. Have to be. There would be no way around that. And then are you going to do that thing that bad franchises do where you fire the GM, you force the next GM to keep the head coach? This is what the Giants did with Joe Judge. Like, yeah, sure. Like Joe Judge deserved it, but it was also, they knew they were hiring another GM. You hurt yourself in the GM search if you force them to keep Joe Judge. So you just clean slate. Obviously, I think Mike McDaniel's a good coach from what I've seen. I think they're going to be great this year. But if they fire Chris Greer, if they fire Chris Greer, it's just like, tough luck, kid. Sorry. Like, you came at the wrong time, especially if Steve Rose thinks he can get Sean Payton.
The guy I'm high on is Mike LaFleur. And everyone knows this guy's a gem in the rough. You know, he's a star in the making. And I really would not want to lose him. So I think the Jets realize what they have, and I think they realize he really has serious potential to become a head coach. So if they made a lateral move like that, I don't think he would even accept the job because he's so close with Robert Saleh. But you know, to keep that guy in your building is huge right now. He's actually more important than Robert Saleh is this year.
I like him too, for the record. I was very impressed with him in that Dolphins game we saw last year. They were creating – it wasn't just that one play call that everyone's copying, the lateral pitch back that Dallas tried in the playoffs and epically fucked it up. He was creative. He got the most out of what he had. I think he's shown a lot in his first year.
Yeah, the game he called against the Buccaneers when the Jets literally had nobody at receiver was a masterpiece. So, like, that guy – and he took a lot of criticism the first month of the season last year. But, you know, he went back in the booth where he normally always was, and that guy just became fucking a star. So we'll see if Zach can translate. Now it's the second year in the system. You know, he's familiar with everything, and this is where the quarterbacks take jumps, man. You got to remember, Zach didn't come from a Power 5 school.
Correct.
You know, to have the expectations this guy has and just come in and light up the league, it was unrealistic, man. But now a second year in the NFL, we'll see.
It was also the fact, too, that he got smoked by a lot of schools when he played schools with better records. He was beating up on a lot of lower-tier schools at BYU as well. That was my big thing of why I knew he'd struggle in his rookie season because, like, remember, he played Coastal Carolina and he got embarrassed. Shout out Phil.
At the same time, outside of Brady Christensen, who's in the NFL from BYU? Like, and, honestly, on the NFL roster?
Quarterback-wise, I don't know, but I know Kyle Van Noy for linebacker.
Well, that was on a Zach Wilson.
That was on Zach's team, yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Well, I want to ask Danny a question, though, because I'm curious on this. And I know, like, we have to wrap up because I have to head out soon. But, this is one of the fun odysseys of us doing this podcast, us three, is we're all kind of in a similar spot, obviously, with the quarterbacks. Mine is different because mine is in his third year. So, like, very different from what you guys are dealing with. But it is a fun, like, thing that we're constantly talking about locally, the questions, you know. New England drafting Bailey Zappi in the fourth round and people freaking out over it. Like, it's fun, like kind of this quarterback intrigue that our three teams have right now that will decide the fate of our division for a long time. Danny, what if Zach does what Tua did, where he goes from bad to average? He did improve, like Tua objectively improved from his rookie year. Like, just it's undeniable. He did. But because you're average and not a franchise quarterback, people get mad at you. People view that as a disappointment, especially when other guys in your class prove to be franchise quarterbacks faster than you did. So maybe the expectations, maybe if every one from the 2021 class is kind of the same, it won't be that big of a deal. But Danny, how does the New York market handle that? What if he's
– Well, what if the thing is he making the Tua interception still? Is he fucking – like define average because there's you know – I don't even think Tua is average right now. I think he's below average.
Okay, well, look, most metrics, I've done the research on this. Almost every metric quarterbacks combine it, group it up. He's like the 18th best quarterback in the NFL right now, which, like, there's 32 total. So, fine. If you want to say that's slightly below average because it's less than 16, fine. It's kind of in the same tier, but you get the point. So
I think you have to be okay with that because honestly, you're betting on his upside. You're betting on his ceiling and Josh Allen's second year was he even average in his second year?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And the thing is, you know, Josh Allen came from a non-power five school too. You know, it takes some time, but you know, if you see the flashes, you know, you're betting on the flashes. You're betting on the upside. So I think you have to be okay with that.
Because I'm just wondering, like, what I'm going through and what Griff is, even though you guys have quarterbacks in the same class, Griff is going through this in a way that you're not. Like, when this obsession in the NFL, which is driving me crazy, that, like, you need, like, this – you need this top five quarterback with a cannon to win a Super Bowl, which is just not true. It's never been true. But everyone is so obsessed with Herbert and Allen and Mahomes and even, like, Stafford, even though he's not at that level, he at least, like, obviously we all know has a gun. Like, everyone is so obsessed – with thinking you need someone at that level to win a Super Bowl, which has just never been true in NFL history. And you then get questions, even though Griff's guy is still a fucking rookie, you have people saying, including us, to be fair, like, oh, he's good, but is he good enough? You know, like that kind of shtick.
I completely agree with that. And I think if Zach Wilson is an average NFL quarterback this year, I think Robert Saleh and Joe Douglas have bought another year of security where it's like year three, you're going to be in that Miami sphere where it's Zach's really got to take off or it's donezo. It's got to look like, you know how Josh Allen in 2020 really, like, I think if, like, say Josh Allen doesn't take off in 2020, who knows if Sean McDermott's still the coach in Buffalo, you know?
And Josh Allen for sure is gone. There's no way he would have gotten a fourth year. Like, if he was playing like he did his first 2 years, there's no way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to go the same road as you, Big Rat. I'm going to give three coaches. I'm going to give one that's just like, it's poking. It's just easy. It's low hanging fruit. That's Mike McCarthy in Dallas, because obviously, look, we all expect the same thing every January, like what I expect from my beloved Maple Leafs every spring. The second one's a little bit off the wall, but I can see it happening, especially if this team regresses, and that's Nick Sirianni, just because we know Philadelphia's.
I like that one.
Yeah, expectations are high. They got A.J. Brown. They got Jordan Davis. Actually, a pretty good draft, the Philadelphia Eagles. But expectations are high to where if they get off to a rough start, you know, Eagles fans are going to be pissed. The third one for me is interesting, and it may not be because of him, but Kevin Stefanski.
Yeah.
Now, hear me out. I know they had the season his first year. They go to the divisional round. But is missing 2 years in the is missing 2 years of playoffs a row enough to keep your job, especially after the one season where you effectively – the same thing with Tennessee did in 2020 – and the 2020 AFC Championship game where you had Casey on the ropes. Patrick Mahomes goes out with a concussion, sure, but you could argue Cleveland should have won that game, and Chad Henne decided to have that crazy third down run. If Cleveland makes the AFC Championship game that year, I think his job is safe. But I think if Cleveland even – let's put the Watson stuff aside because we don't know what's where that's gone yet. That's still getting unraveled. That's a day-by-day onion layer at a time thing. If this team goes 7-10 again, I don't know if that's enough for him to keep his job. I don't know if you can say, oh, but Deshaun's coming, this and that. Yeah. You got Amari Cooper. You've got other pieces. I think there's a legitimate chance that if the Cleveland Browns have a down year, regardless of what happens off the field, I don't know if it's enough to save Stefanski's job. So that's why I have those three. Even though the one I really do agree with is the nudge-nudge wink-wink from Danny. I also would have said Cliff Kingsbury, but the fact that he just got signed in a new deal – it would look horrible in the Cardinals organization for Michael Bidwell if you let him walk, even though rightfully so, I don't think either one of him or Kime deserved to be extended.
Yeah, it would be a world where he like has a bad year, everyone wants him fired, they can't fire him, and there's just like a lot of embarrassment like throughout the offseason about it. Like, you know, not a firing, just like, yeah, we understand we fucked up, it is what it is, deal with it. And then you're kind of like Matt Nagy in his last year, where the entire year everybody just knows. We're just delaying the inevitable here.
Or Mike Zimmer even last year, too, with Minnesota. It was the same thing. My other one, too, and this is another off the wall, but I can see it happening if the team – I know, look, they've done some stuff to not make it better, but to give hope where I think if they don't improve. But Dan Campbell, I know a lot of people buy into him. I have a soft spot for him. But if they go 2-15, I don't know how you bring him back. If you win five games in 2 years, obviously I know Detroit's in a rebuild and they kind of finally bought into that long-term game. I just don't know how you make up for it. I know they gave him a six-year deal. I know he brings enthusiasm and passion and everything. But I think if they improve on their win total, there's going to be a lot of question marks of, okay, is he just a character or is he actually a really good NFL head coach?
Yeah, and you know I wasn't big on that hiring either. It's just like guys like him and Arthur Smith, like you don't hire them with the mindset that the thing is going to get turned around in 2 years. Like it's a 3-4 year, you know, turnaround rebuild. Like you got to fully rebuild things. You can't just give up on plans 2 years in, do it another for another 2 years. You know what I'm saying? Because that's how you don't get good head coach candidates to even come in and try to fix it. You know, no one was big on Dan Campbell at all. Like, no, that guy came out of nowhere.
One and two, but like they are now getting some smoke. And like, this is like, if we, like when we do the regular season podcast, like this is like a very classic move for me. The bad team that everyone's predicting to take a step forward and they're like a year too early. They're like I saw Mina Kimes, like did a whole segment on how she likes them. And a few people were saying, yeah, you got to bet the Lions over. You know, they're well coached. They were in every game last year. It's like, this is always a huge trap. Like this is the team that like is winless the whole year, has like a strong December. Everyone's projecting them to take this like leap, not to be a playoff team or anything. But there's plenty of people that are – there's some people that think they can win 5 games. There's some people that think they'll finish ahead of the Bears in the standings. I've seen that a few times. Like this, it's like a classic trap where it's like you're getting too ahead of yourselves. You're overweighting them being in close games last year. They were like – I think they were the best team against the spread of anyone.
They were really good. I think they were 12-5 against the spread.
And so you overcorrect. You predict too much too soon. And then it's like, oh, wait, this is still a very bad team, which is what they are. They're a bad team. I understand that they're well-coached and all that, but – They're just not there yet. I kind of still expect them to finish top five in the draft. And you do
want to should.
Danny's right. You should expect this. That should be the plan. But bad franchises, when you start to like get a little ahead of yourself, you know, it can kind of come crashing down a little bit. Like you wouldn't be surprised. You know, kind of like Robert Saleh too. Like Robert Saleh wouldn't deserve to be fired after 2 years, but
he also has by a mile has the best situation out of those other two coaches or Arthur Smith and Dan Campbell by far. He actually had a chance this year. Like these guys, like especially the Falcons. I think they pick number one overall next year. Like they have nothing, dude. Well,
can I give one more coach actually? Sure. I have a lot of high expectations for this team, but I think if they don't make the playoffs, it's going to happen. That's Frank Wright from the Indianapolis Colts.
That is one to watch.
Like Jonathan Taylor's my fantasy running back one. Great offensive line. You got a solid defense. Tight end's still a question mark. I don't fully trust Mo'Ali Cox as a tight end one. Obviously, look, they added Alec Pierce. They have our boy, MPJ. And Paris Campbell, too, is another one of those players where it's either he's healthy or he's not. Yeah.
And they
need one more receiver, man. They do. MPJ is not a bona fide one. We like him, but he's not a number one.
He's a 1,000-yard receiver, though. Like,
that's fine. He's a nice number two, though.
But he's not like that Davante Adams, like no. Mike, like in that upper echelon of tight ends. He's not really tight ends.
Very nice receivers. Number two. Nice number two.
He's in that same category. Like I'd put, I don't know.
Fox, man, bring in Julio. Why not?
Mike Williams for the Chargers last year had, like, a really fucking good year. He makes $20 million a year now. Like, you know, what's wrong with that?
That's fine, but is he doing that without Keenan Allen on the other side?
No, probably not, but
– Bring in Julio, man. The familiar is there with Matt Ryan. You know, you need another receiver. That's the perfect spot for Julio.
Mike Williams last year, 1,200 yards. Not bad.
Oh, absolute stud. Yeah. But he's not doing that as a number one.
The Spanos family finally decided to open the paycheck their paycheck as well and do that because I think – I don't know if you saw this, but Derwin James is only making $3.1 million. That's not going to be a big contract next year.
And it is going to be a huge contract. But on the Reich thing, I just wanted to say don't forget to include Chris Ballard in that because they're tied up. To your point, like Jim Irsay like was so upset when they lost that Jaguars game. He was so emotionally like – destroyed. He's flaming.
I picked Jacksonville in the spread in that one.
Yeah, so did I. Danny told me it was a bad fucking idea.
Listen, I read an article yesterday that Vegas was shitting bricks that the Raiders and the Chargers were going to tie that night because they would have took the biggest hit in gambling history if that had happened.
Really? Oh, wow.
Yeah, they had parlays where Jacksonville money line. What was the other game that needed to happen?
Steelers. Yeah. The Steelers beating the Ravens?
Yeah, the Steelers being the Ravens and the Raiders going to a tie. They would have got killed.
Well,
I had Steelers on the spread that week, too. Week 18 was my best gambling week of the season.
I know that Jacksonville thing better. Our Dolphin fans know that Jacksonville thing better than any other fan base in the world. Us, who beat the Patriots every year, and now people get it, but Griff remembers this. every year, year after year, we would beat them and people would forget the result happened. And the next year predict the Patriots win. Every single year, the Dolphins were underdogs in almost all of those games. And it drove us crazy. It's like, we always beat them in Miami. Why aren't you listening to us? Jacksonville has beaten the Colts in Jacksonville for seven straight years.
I will pick the Colts next year. I promise you that.
My other thing too, this year, by the way, the Dolphins are a 3.5-point favorite, I believe, to open the season. So they're finally catching on.
We're finally getting the respect that we deserve. Even 2020, we were favored when we played Cam Newton in December.
Yeah.
But we were only 2-point favorites. We weren't even given the full 3-point home respect.
Yeah. But no, Detroit last year, I remember they cost a lot of people money because they finally were like slowly starting to be like, hey, is this the year for them? But every game I remember last year, I'm like, oh, Detroit's a team where they're gonna have a game against a team where it's like, oh, hey, maybe this is it. This is the game they win, and then they get their asses kicked. Like, do you remember the game against Philly on Halloween last year? That was a game where I'm like, this is a game that they can win. No, they got smoked. I think it was like 41-6.
Yeah, because the Eagles were 2-5 going into that game, and they had the Eagles looked terrible against the Raiders the week before, and that was a very classic. The game was in Detroit. It's like, oh, this is the one that the winless team can finally get their win, and just got murdered. Absolutely. Yeah.
It's like the whole thing too. And then I actually have a really good story about gambling last year. I don't know what it was. I was actually walking my dog the week before Thanksgiving. The Bills were playing the Colts, and I remember I was looming over the Colts to cover the spread that week just because I'm like, you know what, why not? I see a dude walking around in my neighborhood wearing a Darius Leonard jersey out of all things. And I'm like, sign. It's just that's something with sports gambling I've come to notice. If you have a gut feeling or if you see a sign, you go with it. Don't look back on it. I went on it, and I'm like, okay, yeah, let's do the Colts to cover the spread, and the Colts whooped them. That was the Jonathan Taylor's coming out party game.
Yeah, I had a little story like that didn't go well. When I went on Croft Boulevard, and I decided to bet on Tyler Croft's touchdown. Yeah. Didn't even fucking come close.
Come on, man. Of my worst days.
Didn't even come close.
Oh, my God, I remember that. I remember I picked that, and Danny's in my comments on my videos I post. He's like, Croft Daddy, and I'm just like, yeah, let's go. And then he doesn't do anything, and I'm like, what the fuck?
I saw the sign, man. I was like, yep, he's scoring this week.
Yeah, but you know what? It's talks like this that make the NFL so great is the fact that we're still 4 months away from kickoff, and we're having debates like this when literally all it is a giant what if until pads go on.
And just everyone remember, when you're betting spreads, as a 58% capper over the last 2 years, betting 5 NFL lines every week, the key is always fade the overreaction. And like, great example last year for me, the Giants played the Bucs on Monday Night Football. Me and Griff were doing a podcast, of course, as we always do. Bucs killed them. And then the next week, the Giants were at home against the Eagles, and the Eagles were -4. And it's like, that is classic NFL. A primetime game, the bad team gets their asses kicked. They're a home division underdog. That's just easy money every single time. And the Giants won the game outright in that game. That's when Hurts threw 4 interceptions.
Like, you know a good bet to take whenever the Giants play the Eagles?
What?
Boston Scott, touchdown.
That's true. The Giant killer.
Yep. Take a Boston Scott. I picked him up in fantasy because I'm like, you know what? He's there. Giants playing the Eagles. He's good for at least a touchdown and maybe like 100 yards. Boston Scott, for some reason, flourishes against the Giants. Like, I would literally just have him there just being, like, waiting and lurking for that game. The other story I have quickly with Giants and Bucs is 2020. I remember it was Bucs -11.5, and I'm like, that seems too high. Giants lost by 2. I'm like, there's a certain times like that where it's just, like, you see certain things. Like, last year, too, I thought, like, I did it, too, with the Giants and the Chiefs game where I'm like, because that's the one thing still. Chiefs, great football team. Patrick Mahomes, great quarterback. Chiefs, though, horrible spread team.
Yeah. Always. They're always overrated by the public. They're always overrated in betting markets.
They were a little better last year, but to start off last year, they were really bad, and they were 7-9 in 2020. Detroit was 7-9 in 2020 as well.
They might now be better this year because I think people are going to overcorrect Tyreek Hill leaving and the division getting so much better. Like when they play Herbert, when they play Russ, like when they go at Chargers at Broncos, they'll probably be underdogs in both those games, and that will present some value.
Yeah, like this year, that game they play against, I want to pull it up, but they play Arizona week 1. I probably would take them just based off of the fact that, look, let's see what the line's at right now for that one. They're 3-point favorites. The one I would say this for that game, though, I would take under 53 points for that one because I feel like that's that, you know, I've done this so last year so much, you know, you see a game, and you're like, you know what, this is a classic game. They're just going to go at it, points fest, and then defense just shuts everything down where it's, or the offenses just don't get it going. That's classic NFL too, you know, where they like loop you in with like points and points and points and points, but then the points never come.
Yeah. And week one also can get tricky. Like the Titans last year, they got killed by the Cardinals.
I had that over the fuck the Titans.
And hey, look, and everyone thought like, oh, down year for Tennessee, down year for Tennessee. Look, man, they went 12-5. We can call them a fraudulent one seed all we want. They destroyed the Rams in LA. Destroyed them.
Oh yeah, I remember that game.
And the Rams had everybody healthy. And so, you know, like the week one can present traps too for that reason. We're a team that like Griff's, never forget the year Griff's Patriots finally won the Super Bowl again in 2014. Got smoked by the Dolphins in week one. Smoked. Like, got their asses kicked. So.
Was that the Brady suspension?
No.
Brady played. It was the next – the Brady suspension was 2 years later.
Yeah, that week one game was against Arizona, and we won. I want to say it was like 24-22. It was like a really weird score. It was a Sunday night football game of Jimmy Garoppolo and Carson Palmer. It was a bizarre game. Like, here's the thing with that – Bucks Cowboys game. It's Tampa minus 2.5. So if I look at it right now, I would take Cowboys plus 2.5 right there.
Yeah, I can already. That's already a spot I would bet. Tampa Bay did not cover that spread last year when they played in Tampa.
I took that. Yeah. I took that spread last year. I think it was like 9.5 points.
It was, but they didn't cover two. They wouldn't have covered 2.5 either in that week one game last year. Yeah.
I think it was like 30. I think that was like 30-28 was that final score, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct. It was along those ilk.
But I'm looking at week one right now. Like, I see a lot of games where I'm like, this, you guys can call me crazy of this, but I see like a San Francisco Chicago minus 6.5 for San Fran. And I'm like, I can see San Fran winning, but I can see Chicago covering 6.5.
I don't even know how Chicago is going to score, dude.
Games where you, like, you know how last year there was, I'll give a perfect example last year. Remember that it was week nine, where you had Giants Raiders, you had you had Cowboys Broncos, and you had Bills Jags, and every game the underdog won. I remember that, like that, especially that Bucks, I keep saying Bucks, Broncos Cowboys game, where the Cowboys got their asses handed to them by the Denver Broncos, and I cost me survival. There's just certain games like that. I just feel like Danny or traps. Like even last year, I remember. San Francisco, I think, either barely covered or Detroit covered against San Francisco last year.
Detroit covered. Detroit covered at the last second, though. They needed, like, a bunch of crazy shit to go down. But, yeah.
You know what I mean, though? Like, that could be a game where it's, like, San Francisco's, like, got it, and then, like, Detroit kind of comes back and then, like, has a last-second heroic cover. Like, even to last year, there was that Vikings-Bears game on Monday Night Football where if Jesper Horsted had actually caught the ball, he would have covered the spread for the Bears.
Yeah, Danny, you can't see a world where San Francisco wins like 31-27 against the Bears, and then the Bears proceed to start the season 0-10.
But then like the spread for the next week when the Bears go into everyone's gonna take freaky. But you know how week one's freaky too, though? Because then the Bears play week two in Green Bay, and everyone's gonna think, hey, you know what? They're going in there, they're gonna cover, it's a rivalry game, and the Bears get their asses whooped. Because in Lambeau on a Sunday night, that's just what's due to happen. But anyway, guys, this has been a blast. But I think it's about time we wrap up. Big Rat, Danny. Guys, thank you for coming on once again. If you got anything else to say, you can say it now.
Let's go Mavericks. Let's go Jordan Poole.
Heat and seven. Take Jets under 6.5. But the Jets still will improve this year. They will be a very good competitive 6-11 team. So that's all I got for you today. Thank you.
Clip that.
I'll clip all that. I'll remember all of that. I'll remember all the conversation because, guys, we'll be back here. You'll probably see these guys again for the AFC preview, but you'll definitely see either one of them. You'll either see them both separately or together before then. But anyway, guys, enjoy this. More podcasts to come because we got some stuff planned. Enjoy the offseason, everyone.
I'm Jeff Woods, and I'm shining a light on music and the rock stars who make it.
He just was one of those people. He stood out.
He was a magic guy. He really was a magic guy. We all have force. He had the same amount of force as we all have.
This was before Led Zeppelin. Robert was full on. I mean, he was Led Zeppelin without the band behind him. He had the hair, the jeans, the whole thing, you know. And he was amazing.
The Records and Rockstars podcast, heard around the world and yours to hear wherever you get podcasts. All the episodes from JeffWoodsRadio.com.
Hi, I'm Logan Anderson, host of the Say the Damn Score podcast. On my show, I deep dive into the sports broadcasting business by, you guessed it, talking to sportscasters. The show has featured big names like Bob Costas, Kenny Albert, and Vern Lundquist, as well as many up-and-coming broadcasters who you may not know yet, but you will know soon. Whether you're looking for professional development as a sportscaster, different career paths, or if you just want to be entertained by hearing some of the best storytellers in the world tell their own stories, this podcast is for you. You can subscribe to the podcast on all major podcast platforms, or you can visit our website, saythedamnscore.com.